When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Good evening, dear friends. I am your head mister, Stefan Gearhart.
And I am your co-mister, the man with no name, Lance Wayne.
And we are the Misters of the Dark.
Join us as we discuss everything from horror books, films,
and even pretty princesses. Join us every other Tuesday in our dilapidated mansion. You never know what's going to happen next.
Only on the Fearscape Media Network.
That's a good laugh.
Hey everybody, Josh here with Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. I don't know if you're like me, but I've got glasses. And one of the things that I really hate with wearing my mask is that my glasses constantly fog. Yeah, I've got the kind of mask that you could pinch the nose and it's supposed to keep the glasses from fogging, but it still fogs. Sometimes I just get outside on a cold day, come back in the house, my glasses fog. Get out to pump gas, my glasses fog. So one of the things that I came across is this spray bottle that is anti-fog spray. And you spray it on and you wipe it off and then it protects your glasses and keeps them from fogging. And I'm going to tell you, this stuff is spectacular. I've even cleaned my glasses a couple of times since applying it and it still works. I also have anti-glare glasses, and this stuff is safe for anti-glare glasses. If you want to pick up your own bottle, go to fearscapepodcast.com/no more fog.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Happy that you're able to join us as we continue to explore and try to understand the strange phenomenon that seems to exist all over the world. Stefan and I are on a journey, and we share that journey with you.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another enlightening episode of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast here on the Fearscape Media Network. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, joined as always by the too fresh for prime time host of mine, Josh Rutledge. What's up, brother?
Nothing much, man. You know, just hanging out, enjoying the high strangeness. So,
man, lots of high strangeness.
For real.
I kind of expected now that, and I say this, and I'm going to jinx everything, but now that COVID is starting to cool off, I expected, I don't know what I expected, but I feel like it's been on ham lately.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the number of like UFO, UAP sightings went up when people started having to be at home more, and I guess as like an escape from your family, you know, you step outside for a little bit, yeah. and then you see stuff in the night sky. So my concern is that as we go, you know, quote unquote, go back to normal, that some of that will drop off because,
oh, I think so.
You know, people will be getting back into routine.
Well, not just eyes on the skies, but people are at home. And so if there's any spirit hauntings or anything like that, it's way more quiet. You're not sitting in a big office with people chatting, yeah, and tapping and typing. You know, you're in your own space and you're kind of there a little bit more. And you may be seeing things a little bit more. So I agree. Yeah. I think once people really all start getting back to the office, which is already happening. I mean, the roads in Arizona are already starting to get packed again. It used to take me like 20 minutes to get to work. Now it's taking like 35, 40. And from what I've heard, it's probably going to get worse because Arizona tends to have crazy traffic, not during COVID. So we will see. I see you, Phoenix. I see you getting ready to mess up my morning. But yeah, anyways, we have a really, really fantastic show tonight. We've got a bucket list guest coming on the show tonight from our favorite podcast, which is the Penny Royal Podcast. We've got Nathan Isaac, the host of that show, is coming on our show to be interviewed with us, getting spooky with us, so to speak. Yep. You know, he was on Hellier. That's where we all first saw him on the episode that dug into Somerset down there, which he was already looking into the craziness of Somerset and looking to start this podcast, and Hellier gave him a great launching pad to do so. We've already talked to Kyle, our good buddy from the International Paranormal Museum and Research Center, who's a producer of that show. And so, you know, we're very excited to have Nathan on the show. So make sure you stick around after the break for that, because you're not going to want to miss it.
Yep, indeed.
Indeed. But we ought to get moving on then, since we're going to have a sweet show coming up, which every show is sweet, just as sweet as your smile, Josh. That's how sweet it is.
Just like how sweet it is to be loved. Appreciated by you.
So. You're welcome. You're welcome. But let's get moving to our first segment of the week, the psychic word of the week.
And now, the psychic word of the week.
Psychic word of the week comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary by June G. Bletzer, PhD. Rest in peace, Dr. Honeybear. So as usual, we flip through the psychic dictionary until we just feel the time to stop. This time we landed on page 290. Which goes down to 11.
Magic number. It's just a magic number. That's right.
All the numbers are really magic, to be honest with you. But I mean, 11's a good one. But anyways, the phrase that popped into my eye line here was human batteries. Batteries. And immediately I think of Dark Crystal when they're like sucking the life force out of those little guys.
I immediately think of The Matrix.
Oh, okay.
Which was literally human batteries. Sorry, spoiler alert. So
yeah, I mean, in a way, Christians in Roman times were kind of like human batteries. They kept the light for the theater, right? Because they were set on fire. Is that too awkward?
Yeah, I see what you're doing there. It took a long time to get there, though.
It did, and I feel weird about it now. I'm going to take it back. Yeah, I'm going to leave it there.
I don't know. I'm going to leave it there.
I don't know.
Take it back.
Decide for yourself. Anyways, human batteries. Here's what we got here. Looks like there's three definitions here. One, sitters in a seance who give their electrical energy to the medium to be used in the physical phenomena occurs naturally with no special effort on their part. Two, persons who are born with so much electricity that no one can touch them cause much damage as they go through life through no willing of their own. Three, persons whose electrical energy is accelerated while in a trance state and is used for extraordinary phenomena experiments. For example, extending an arm toward another to give him the electrical jolt. So this makes me wonder if this is me, man, because I tell you what, I get static shock more than anybody in my entire life that I've ever met. It happens all the time. I have burned the lips off of my wife kissing her in static shock. And I cannot tell you how many times my head has hit the ceiling fan cord and you hear a loud ka-pa because lightning has literally shot through my whole body. From touching the damn ceiling fan cord, it has happened so many times because I'm so staticky all the time. I just need to, all my shirts need to be made of dryer sheets.
Well, I mean,
essentially what it needs to happen.
Phoenix is dry. I mean, it's a dry area.
This happened in Kentucky. This happened in Ohio, in Orlando. Every 100 other places I've lived, I have always been electrical. And so I think that June had me get on that. So I knew what I am. I am a human battery.
It's electric.
Do the boogie, oogie, oogie. And that is now my superhero name is Human Battery.
Makes me also though think about the movie Powder in it. The movie, yeah, where the dude's like, you know,
they also call me the Fleshy Jolt.
I'm not sure that's a good thing or not.
Not taking that one back. I'm not taking that one back.
But battery. But it also makes me question, and it'd probably be a good question for Santosh is. How does Reiki fit into that?
Well, I'm a Reiki master myself, so it's in terms of Reiki, I don't know, because Reiki's not electrical. That's not
well, but it's still all I mean, electricity is energy, right? So, sure,
but that can be said literally about anything. We can literally say because everything is energy.
Yes, but what I'm thinking of is. When we did our first Estes session at outside of Waverly Hills, and I had, you know, the whole earmuffs and you know, vision blocked off and the whole kit and caboodle, just like an Estes session would have. And I see the waves moving across my vision as you are sending me or putting Reiki out there.
Yeah, okay. So they could affect...
So I like the
impulses.
The third, I think it was the third definition that you read was that the person could extend their arm as to pass along the energy, right?
Sure. And if they're separate, maybe it wasn't Reiki that you saw, but indeed just my fleshy jolt shooting across your face.
Yep. The human battery strikes again.
I am the fleshy jolt. Be prepared to have my jolt shot across your face. As long as your eyes are closed, you'll see it.
No, stop. Oh, not safe for work. No.
Not safe for work. Let's move on to another segment of the day. What are we doing next? Oh, I've got some spooky news for you. So let's go ahead and move right into spooky news. All right, so I've got some interesting spooky news for you this week. We haven't really had a dedicated... Well, I guess we did just a week or two ago, so I take that back. Boy, I'm taking a lot back tonight. But yeah, the spooky news I came across, and you'll like this, and those of you that are out in the Midwest, or like the actual like Midwest out in Oklahoma, get ready, because it's time for you to make some money. The headline reads here, Bigfoot Bounty... in Oklahoma passes $2 million if captured unharmed. This comes from news10.com straight out of Oklahoma. And here's what the story says. For many, the idea of capturing a mythical creature is unthinkable, let alone unbelievable. But for some, the idea is not only alive and well, there's now more than $2 million on the line. At the end of January, Oklahoma State Representative Justin Humphrey, Republican, filed legislation to establish what he hoped would be a boon for local tourism, a Bigfoot hunting season. Over the next few weeks, no surprise, but the bill died in committee. But that has not stopped some from continuing the effort to encourage someone to capture Bigfoot. State Representative Humphrey has since told the Enid News and Eagle newspaper, he said that he's okay with his bill not making it out of committee. He said the exposure of his bill received did exactly what he wanted it to do, to promote interest in tourism in Southeast Oklahoma. Humphrey and others have claimed that this area of Oklahoma has the ninth most sightings in the world of Sasquatch. Humphrey is now working with state officials to set up rules for a Sasquatch quest. Those are in quotations, by the way. He's quick to point out that the idea is to not kill anything, but to capture Bigfoot unharmed and without breaking Oklahoma laws. According to the Enid News and Eagle, Humphrey's original plan suggested lawmakers set aside a $25,000 bounty for Bigfoot's capture, but he said an upcoming Hollywood Bigfoot movie pledged around $2 million, while another private business promised an additional $100,000 on top of that. This eliminated any need for state funding. Humphreys hopes that the state tourism campaign would include branded license plates, decals, and an annual commemorative tracking license. He says that the state should also include a proper map showing people recommended areas to spot Bigfoot. He says the profits from the Bigfoot tourism campaign would be used for lake, park, and road improvements. He says, come to Oklahoma, have an adventure, enjoy yourself, tell your friends, and come on back.
So it, you know, I feel like West Virginia, you know, Pennsylvania, Montana, they totally missed the opportunity, right, to take advantage of this, because I think probably those places are, you know, if Oklahoma, if this place in Oklahoma is the ninth on the list, then mm-hmm. West Virginia's got to be like second or third, yeah, on the
or
list.
Even Kentucky, or,
yeah,
man. So. And here's the other thing. $2 million. That's $2 million haze. Like, good. Well, gracious.
It reminds me of a couple weeks back. Bigelow put out a thing offering $1 million to the person that could prove the existence of an afterlife. And John E.L. Tenney put out a thing saying,
"Sorry, that- gonna be good."
That he would offer 1 million doll hairs for someone who could prove the existence of ghosts.
Is he everyone's uncle? Like,
I know.
Jeez. But no, this Bigfoot thing reminds me of a few months, I think, before you took over hosting the show. Brad and I had covered a news story about Jose Canseco setting up a hotline for you to call. Like, he's old baseball guy. You could call to go Bigfoot hunting with him. Like, if you want it, because he's like hardcore Bigfoot hunter now, and he set up a hotline for you to call to be like, hey, Jose, can I come with you? And he's like, yes, yes, you can. Let's go find Bigfoot.
Like, have you seen Jose Canseco recently?
No, I have not.
I mean, he is like, he got really into bodybuilding, and he is like buff. I mean, like buff horse buff. I mean, you know, so yeah.
Oh boy, I'm looking at him. Jeez, he's starting to look like Lou Ferrigno.
Like, you know, if they do a new movie about the, you know, pump you up guys from Saturday Night Live, I mean, he could totally play one of them. So
he could. Oh man, that was almost a year ago. That he was pushing about these Bigfoot aliens during pandemic and stuff. So really cool. Yeah. Oh, because that was a different story. Sorry. This is another story, I guess, like a year later. Sorry. I was like, you've been on here longer than you.
No, yeah.
Where he got really concerned about aliens during the pandemic. So I'm not even going to. Oh, yep. There it is. Says you can also hunt aliens with him for a mere $5,000 in cash.
I mean, he should just partner up with Dr. Greer. They could charge all kinds of money to do something.
Oh, Lord. All right. I tell y'all, I know Bigfoot. I could just invite him over and get us $2 million cool. Well, you know what that means. If the Jersey Devil's over here, it's time for Cryptid of the Week.
Y'all, it's the Jersey Devil. Hope y'all are ready to meet some of my friends.
Cryptid of the Week.
All right, Josh, Cryptid of the Week. What do you got for us this week in your book o' cryptids?
Yeah, so this is the Baru.
Baru! That's the noise that a beagle makes.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. That's what they say. Everybody that has a beagle, they're like, "Oh, has he done his first Baru yet?" Because he's like, "Baru."
Oh, okay. I see what you did there. So this is spelled B-U-R-U. So it could be Buru, but it's actually Baru. As we were informed by our good friend, a theologian, that Pi Day in the ancient Greek was pronounced P, and so it's actually P Day. So
yeah, there's this. Gosh, so there's this this woman that we used to go to college with at Western Kentucky University, me and Santosh. I'm not gonna say where her name is, but she was something else. And if you ever even said anything to her, like, she was pretty much like a loner and didn't like anybody. If you said anything, she'd be like, "You have insulted my warrior's pride." Like, seriously. And she would dive at you and stuff. Like, it was crazy. But one of the things was that she got mad at all of us because we were doing Oedipus at the time. She's like, "You guys know that it's actually pronounced Oedipoo?" And we're like, "Yeah, ain't nobody gonna pronounce Oedipus Oedipoo. It is a tragedy, a Roman tragedy, and ain't nobody gonna call it Oedipoo." Sorry, I insulted your warrior's pride.
Yeah.
Anyways, Baru.
Baru. So this comes from the Himalayas in India. It says here that the Apatani villagers of India said the Baru was a large exotic lizard. Its 20-inch long head featured a flattened snout, a forked tongue, and two pairs of pointed teeth protruding out of the upper and lower jaws of the front of its mouth. Its elongated neck could raise its head above the water or retract it to be closer to the surface. The thick, scaleless body slipped through the water with ease. It preferred the deeper water, but came to shore when the summer heat turned its lakes to shallows. Elusive and seldom seen, the Baru had a deep, bellowing cry that struck fear in the hearts of locals, even though it was considered a vegetarian and didn't even eat fish.
It almost sounds like an alligator mixed with a Komodo dragon.
Yeah, I mean, the pictures that are in the book, it is very alligator-esque, but also almost like a saber-toothed tiger, and the way that it's the teeth kind of protrude. I don't know. It's really interesting. The drawings that are in here. It was actually, so the Daily Mail, a British newspaper, labeled it the Himalayan dragon. So,
yeah, that there are some cryptozoologists that think that Komodo dragons are close relatives, especially the way you talked about the neck and how it can extend and kind of pull back into itself. Komodo dragons can do that. Very, very interesting, man. Creepy Barus, not to be confused with the beautiful, cute little howl from a baby beagle.
So, real quick, just a quick anecdotal information here. Mm-hmm. This guy named Ralph Izzard, wrote a book about it in 1951 called The Hunt for Baru. It is said here that Izzard's reputation as a rugged man of the world was said to be the inspiration of Sir Ian Fleming's fictional literary character, James Bond.
Really? Interesting. How cool would that be if James Bond was kind of based off a cryptid hunter?
Yeah.
I already feel Ken Gearhart already perking up.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Ken, you don't really sound like Scooby-Doo, but,
Is Scooby-Doo a cryptid? Because he can talk?
Yeah, he kind of is. Anyway. we need to get rolling because we need to move into this incredible interview. We're going to be getting spooky with the host of Penny Royal Podcast, Nathan Isaac. So please stick around after the break. We just got a short break here, and we're going to jump right straight into that interview. We'll see you guys in a few.
You've heard us talk about all the amazing books we've been able to listen to on Audible. Everything from fiction to sci-fi to true crime and more. Audible is the leader in the audiobook industry with a library of over 200,000 audiobooks. Start listening now by going to fearscapepodcast.com/audible. The internet could be better than it is today. More open, private, and secure. That's why the engineers, system administrators, and designers at NordVPN have spent the last 8 years developing a security and privacy tool to bring this vision closer to reality. Today, millions of NordVPN users around the world click the blue Quick Connect button whenever they need online protection. That's a very private club. To join this club, go to fearscapepodcast.com/VPN and protect your internet activity today.
You know, all over the world, just to go down into these cave systems here in Pulaski County. You know, it's so much of it's mapped too. It's kind of crazy. I mean, they're beautiful cave systems. There are all these photos of these guys with giant, you know, those blow up unicorns and things.
Oh, where yeah, they have like the swimming pools and lakes.
Yeah, yeah, but like eight people can fit inside of them. You know, they're like gigantic ones. So they take those down there. These pictures of them with these huge unicorns floating around in the water.
Well, you know, it makes me think about how much of the cave system in Kentucky is not mapped, how much we don't know about, because the openings are just too small to squeeze in through or whatever the case may be. And I read an article not too long ago about how there's a satellite now in space that can they're using it to map ice flows in Antarctica. And it makes me wonder if they could point it at, like, you know, cave systems, and basically it's, you know, ground penetrating radar from space, basically, you know, and see if they can, you know, figure out how vast these cave systems are and old lava flows and all that kind of stuff. So
it's like, was it LIDAR? Isn't it LIDAR that does that too?
Yeah, I think that's what yep. So
yeah, I mean, you know, they've probably mapped so much of it. They probably know about cave systems that we can't even imagine. You know,
well, yeah, I mean, it's funny because I put in, I don't know, it's been probably last year, I was reading an article where somebody did a Freedom of Information Act for the National Forestry Service to see what information they had as it relates to UFO sightings and all that kind of stuff. So that inspired me. Well, that and listening to Penny Royal inspired me to put in one for USGS. Because I thought, what are these kind of, like, you know, obscure, or not really obscure, but like offshoot government agencies? Like, what are they getting that nobody thinks to ask about, you know?
That's a great point, man. That's a great idea.
Yeah, we've been seriously thinking about just here. We like last week we were talking about Dreamy Draw Dam out here in Phoenix, which supposedly lore says that there's a UFO buried underneath of it. That's why they built this dam in the middle of a place where there's no water.
Water, yeah.
Especially this is up higher. There's no water. And so we're like, I'm meaning to do a FOIA request on that as well, because it's the Army Corps of Engineers that did it. And so it's this little offshoot. So I'm like, let's see what we can find.
So the FOIA request too, I mean, I think a lot of people probably think, that it isn't something that is worth doing.
Right.
That, if I fire this off, there's no way I'll get anything back. Right. In fact, it'll take years.
Yeah.
So recently I gave it a shot. I think this was back in January. I finally was like, hey, you know, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna see if there are any documents on Alexander Guterma. And so I hit the FBI. I used Muckrock, which is a great service, right? It's like $20 a month and you get a certain number of requests. And they have templates and they automatically file it for you. You know, you just tell them, you fill out where you want it to go to, they do it. So I did it, and for Alexander Guterma, I did some research. There's some specific language that you need to include.
Yeah.
That they'll use. If you don't include it, then they'll just kick it, you know, because, you know, they have an out. And so I did that, and is it two weeks ago or three weeks ago, I received 1,662 pages of FBI documents on Alexander Guterma.
Wow, that's spectacular.
Isn't that crazy, man?
What's the name of that service?
It's called Muckrock. M-U-C-K Rock.
Yeah. See, I've always just gone straight to the FOIA website and filled it out myself.
Dude, use Muckrock, dude. And okay. They even had me set a thing saying they had 40 days to reply. They replied in 32 days.
because my grandparents' farm in Shelby County, back in the 40s, before Louisville built Stanford Field, they were looking at building, or I guess late 40s, they were looking at building an international airport in Kentucky, or in the Kentucky area. And my grandparents' farm was the highest flat surface between Louisville and Cincinnati. And so they came out and they surveyed, like I found newspaper articles where it was amongst the, you know, the final, you know, sites for an airport and everything. And so, you know, I thought, hey, it'd be really cool if I could get where the Army Corps of Engineers came out and did the survey and then, you know, frame it, and like it would be a nice little family heirloom and stuff like that. So I submitted one to try to get that information. And unfortunately, they came back and said, we don't have any record that we ever did a survey. But I'm like, here it is in the freaking newspaper that says that you did it. So, you know, so maybe I should do it again using Muckrock. So,
yeah. Did you cite the newspaper article too?
I did.
Okay. Well, yeah. But use Muckrock, man. I'm telling you, for some reason, it's like, I don't know how they do it. Obviously automated, but I like looked a couple of things and it was like, doop. Now I've sent one to the CIA and I've got one headed to this one. I don't think I'll get. If I get this, it'll be the most amazing thing ever. But the whole Oakwood story about the mental health facility, mm-hmm.
yeah,
the witch cults in the basement and all that crazy ass stuff. I've submitted that to the state health department and the state division for health. And so we'll see. I mean, they sent it to them, but are there really people there in the state of Kentucky dedicated to
responding
to these requests? I don't know. I mean, I think that'll take a lot longer.
Right? Well, and then how much of those paper files have been lost over time through flood damage and just all that?
Or just haven't been digitized yet. I mean, So, but yeah, those FOIA things though are really cool. And I mean, even the one that I submitted for my grandparents, I did get a response within, it was about 25 days or something.
That's awesome, though. Yeah.
So
at least the government's doing what they're supposed to be doing.
That's right. Well, and the only thing is, obviously, is the conspiracy theorist side of me says that if we submit something for the Corps of Engineers for Dreamy Draw Dam, they can send back, yep, here's the blueprint where we built the dam, but are we going to accept that, you know, that that's what was actually done, you know? So,
right. That's always the question too, is like, if they tell you they don't have anything, it's like, but they control the flow.
It's true. I mean, it's like, if they were digitizing this stuff and they found something, would they be like, we're not sending this? Yeah. Well, with the Gitarma stuff, I will say there was a large amount a decent section of the documents involved the CIA and some things that were happening, and those were heavily redacted.
Yeah.
And definitely you could infer from those statements that something very nefarious was happening. Mm. But, you know, I mean, I'm never going to be able to see what that is, who those names were. But
if you could file a FOIA for the same documents from the CIA, and maybe it's redacted because it's interagency. They don't, you know, so if you file for the same, you get the same documents from the CIA, they'll redact the FBI stuff. Right. But then you'd have their version and the FBI version to fill in the gaps.
That's interesting.
That is very interesting, Josh. Yeah.
Well, we'll find out. Hopefully they'll produce. that's true though. I think people should do this. I think people should take advantage of it. And if there's, in the last 2 weeks, in the last 2 days, we've discussed, which I'll tell you guys about this later if you want to talk about it, but we discovered something totally new in this area that I had never heard of. And now I have to change. I'm in the middle of working on the second season. It's like, now I've got to add an episode because this has to be in there. So now I'm going to have to file all these FOIA requests about this thing. And I'm like, this is great, but people should do it. You know, you come across stuff in your hometown that's weird or interesting, or there's a really sort of flamboyant character or interesting person, you know, in the town's history, why not fire it off, man? You know, like to see what you're going to get back. You might find just an incredible history.
And not even just FOIA. I mean, just doing research. I mean, just like you did with Penny Royal. I mean, good Lord, just the shit that you came across. I mean, it's like, I hate to be the the hey, let's play origin story, but it's like, how did you just even get tapped into this?
Yeah.
Yourself, like, I mean, I lived in Somerset and I thought it was weird, but I was never like,
we need to do a podcast about
this. I mean, I feel like one day you were hanging a picture above your bathtub and you slipped and hit your head on the tub, and when you came to, you had drawn a picture that said Pennyroyal on it or something.
It was kind of like that. It was kind of like that. No, I mean, it really was one of those strange things where, I mean, it was very organic. I think that's the most, for me, the most enjoyable part of it was, I don't want to say most enjoyable part. I'm talking about some really heinous things that have happened.
Right.
Like,
right.
This guy's morbid, you know? I don't mean that, but it was very exciting. It's still exciting because it's obviously still sort of unfolding. Yeah. But just starting to research, moving down here from Lexington, Kentucky, right? Because I'm from Eastern Kentucky, from Appalachia. I didn't really want to move back to a small town.
Right.
I lived in Lexington for 12 years, went to Transylvania, like, which is weird, you know? Obviously, I found out that Transylvania had the meat shower meat, which if I'd been this deep into all this stuff at the time, I would have, God, you know, I would have probably stolen this shit. You know?
Yeah, but, we used to play, Josh and I both went to Campbellsville University for a little while. I remember playing tranny at, I used to be in Quiz Bowl.
Yeah, dude.
Academic team. We used to play up at tranny.
Yeah, and that's a very historical place too. Mm-hmm. You know? And then Raffinesque, everything there is named after Raffinesque and the Raffskiller and all this stuff. And then I find out while I'm researching Pennyroyal that, you know, Raffinesque was the polyglot, you know, this extremely talented teacher, you know, there, who ended up mapping all the Edina mounds. You know, and then he also, the bats that he just discovered all these things. And it's like, I never even knew, you know, I'm up there partying, you know, and getting drunk every weekend. There was this like crazy history that I would eventually collide with, you know. But,
well, so if you could go back and decide not to get drunk and instead research the history, would you?
Oh, yeah, dude, for sure. No, for real. People would have really thought I was weird then. You know?
Yeah.
We were already weird, even at Campbellsville, man, because we were like, there was like a few of us that were pagans in the Southern Baptist College, and we're already like so much conspiracy just about Campbellsville. Like, we had just such weird stuff happen to us there. And then, like, you know, Campbellsville is one of three places that says that it is the geographical center of Kentucky, and then we mapped out where those three were, and they formed a triangle, and we were like, oh my God, we're in the Hellmouth. Like, this is funny. Like,
that's funny, man. What are the other two places?
God, I would have to look it up. It's been a long time thinking about it, but I remember finding that was weird, that there were two other places that claimed the geographical center.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, well, I wonder they formed the Kentucky Triangle. You know,
so. I mean, that's a real thing. You know, it really is. Yeah. There really is a Kentucky Triangle. But when I moved down here, though, like, what really kind of started was just, like, I've mentioned this before, but seeing the people down in the town square with the signs saying, you know, you did it, protesting sort of toward the mayor's office and the main government building, you know, the downtown where the judges are and everything, the old courthouse. And when I asked my neighbors, and they mentioned the murders that had happened, and then I started asking more about it. And of course, the first thing they tell me is that there's a cult, you know, and later we found out that it's, you know, again, there's no, I don't think there's a cult, but there are lots of different groups. And the stories I was being told were sort of an amalgamation of three different stories. But it did set me down this path to start asking questions, because it's so incredible. You know, it's such an incredible story that Dateline came here, you know, on the 25th anniversary, you know. And and when you do dig into it, when you read the newspaper articles, when you look at all this, it's undeniable that something strange happened, right? However you look at it. And then I knew already about Sedona. That was something I had researched, and that it was such a hot spot. You know, at the time I found the article, and this was back in the late 2000s, they were talking about how Sedona was the you know, it was the highest number of UFO sightings at that time.
I talk about it all the time. It still is, as far as I know. And it is. It's nuts, man.
Yeah, it's nuts. You know, and a lot of people say it's because, and that's the article that kind of started me on that part of the research, was that, you know, it's not all UFOs. Some of it's energy. People are seeing these energy balls. And so why are they seeing them? Well, because there's quartz and there's this super powerful geomagnetic field, you know, focused up through the quartz. It causes the piezoelectric effect, and that's affecting people's minds. You know, it's causing them to see these balls of energy that they think are UFOs. And then when I, you know, like I said, you know, anybody can find these files on, I think the European Space Station, Space Agency has these files. NASA has these files, KMZ files. You can download them. You drop them onto Google Earth, you know, download the desktop version, and you can drop, you know, the temperature of the ocean for the last 100 years, you know, and there's all kinds of stuff like that. And they have one for the geomagnetic intensities. And I dropped it on there, and sure enough, Sedona lit up Southern Alaska, which gives me, or makes me think there's some credence to Linda Moulton Howe's claim that there's a pyramid and, you know, and under the ice in Southern Alaska. It's like, well, there is a giant spike of geomagnetic energy in Southern Alaska.
It is also where Sarah Palin lives, is in
exactly.
You know, but, I was just going to say something that I also found out recently is that in Arizona, specifically around the Phoenix area, it's an intersection point of like 6 different ley lines.
Yeah, dude. I just interviewed a guy that does the Phoenix Enigma in Phoenix, and he was talking about that, and it was crazy.
It is. Yeah, I mean,
it's crazy. Well, like one of the other places that there's so many intersection of ley lines is Stonehenge.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, so, I mean, a lot of those monuments like that are big intersections and stuff. And it's like the fact that I ended up moving out to Phoenix, I'm not surprised now with the way the show's been going and everything. And I'm like, now I'm here out in this epicenter of crazy. I'm like, this is fantastic.
Well, dude, out there in Phoenix, too, there are all these Freemasons that are buried underneath these pyramids, right? And they have eagles on top.
Yep.
They look like the pyramid here in Somerset. Oh, have you looked any of this stuff up?
No, I haven't, but I'm about to.
there's a guy that's entombed there too, and it's just so weird, man. You know,
weird. Well, speaking of which, I did look up the geographical centers. We've got 3 miles northwest of Lebanon, in Marion County on Kentucky 429, and then of course Campbellsville, and you can see the little marker right in front of the Montgomery Library. Okay. And then southwest of Lebanon Junction in Bullitt County is the third one.
And those form like a weird triangle.
They form
an isosceles triangle.
Crazy, man.
That's strange, man. I mean, Kentucky overall is just a really, really strange place. I think, you know, one of the things that sort of emerged for me, especially something I found out 2 days ago, that I can't say, it's just like the place keeps unfolding in these weird ways.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, there's no way I can find anything else out about this place that's strange, right? We have mined this, and it just keeps unfolding. And that's why you've got to ask yourself, is it all real? I mean, it definitely is. Everything that we found, anyone can look any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's incredible that it's all stacked in one geographic place, you know?
Right. But you're the one that connected the dots to the synchronicities, right? You know, like that's, you were led that way. So,
yeah. And like I said, I was saying, you know, it was sort of organic how it was like. These murders happened, and I'd known about the, you know, when I zoomed in on the map and found out that Somerset was one of those hot spots of geomagnetic energy, you know, that's what led me to find NASA's articles about the Kentucky anomaly, you know, and it's just crazy to find out the place you're living in is literally the biggest spike in the Western Hemisphere, you know, it's like,
right.
And they even have those gravity maps, and it shows that the gravity here is different. I mean, have you noticed that when you were here, when you lived here for a year, did you feel like there was a heaviness
yeah,
that, you know, that I, left you when you moved away?
I was thinking about that because most, I'll tell you, like most of the craziest ghost, like paranormal things that have happened to me in Somerset. I lived in a house off of Ohio Street. And like to the point there were two spots in the house that I couldn't even physically look at because my body would not allow me to look. One was the coal center or the coal cellar. Every time my friend, she was like, you know, I need to get something down or put something down. I'm like, I can't move. I can't look down there. And then the other thing was in the bedroom closet that's right next to the stairwell up top was this hole in the closet that went above the stairwell. I don't know what it was, but she couldn't fix it either because she's like, every time I try to get, and none of us have looked in there. I'm like, there's a dead body or something that's been in there. She's been in this house for 20 years. She still ain't looked in it yet. And I'm like, I know I can't either. I've tried. We've had friends that have come over. I'm like, just look. And they get like halfway down. We're like, I can't. And that was the room that I got like held down and smacked in the face a whole bunch. And just the craziest stuff happened to me, man.
Like, I mean, that's,
but yeah,
I mean,
felt heavy. I agree with
makes-
that.
Makes me wonder if, you know, if the science or data is showing that gravity is more there, makes you wonder if you were to measure how high you could jump there and then go outside of the field and measure how high you could jump somewhere else. Because if gravity is greater there, you should have a stronger muscle tone. So wherever you are that is not that gravitational pull, you should be able to do more physical things, you know, differently. So
totally. I bet we could. And also, like, I'm sure in if you could do even a small laboratory thing, you know,
yeah,
to see
yeah
if things fall a little bit faster.
Here. Right. Yeah. Or like mm-hmm see how mercury reacts. Just little stuff. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, or you know, just something weight, just something weighed differently, right?
I know. Well, then we're going to one of the, you know, we've got the Liminal Lodge, which is sort of our Patreon. It's our mm-hmm research group, you know, where we're doing like all the Good Term stuff. I've published that for everybody to kind of dive into. Darian's helping me, and you know, we develop a lot of data mining software, you know, actually as part of our business. And so we've applied those same principles to kind of data mine a lot of documents and all this stuff. But one thing we're doing too is expanding it, the research, because I was already working on virtual reality with Dan Dutton. And so we're Dan, and Dan appears in the show. He's the a very prominent Kentucky artist, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
He's the intersection with Hellier, really. The weirdest intersection is because of Dan. But part of the Fawn film involves putting on these VR goggles and sort of experiencing becoming the Fawn.
Oh, I want to see that so bad. Yeah. So,
but while he and I were working on this, I started to study this concept of sacred spaces, because when you put on like an Oculus, you have to draw out the space you're in,
mm-hmm,
just sort of defining this sacred space in which you're going to have this experience. Right. Mm-hmm. And so Darry and I, we're already working on developing that for the Fawn film with Dan. And then we started working with random number generators and channeling to try to use your intention to lower the randomness below the Shannon threshold, the Shannon entropy threshold, mm-hmm, to see if you were actually exerting an effect, right? So we created this mm-hmm thing called the channel bot. And so we've got that. Where I was going to tell you that we're buying one of the Schumann resonance machines that actually shows a readout of geomagnetic anomalies.
Hmm.
There's one on the web. I think it's actually called Schumann resonance. There's a Twitter account, but it's located in Las Vegas. But it shows fluctuations in the Earth's magnetic field. But we want to put one of those in the studio and wire that up. We're wiring up all these random number generators. We've even picked up a brain imaging software.
Ooh, that's cool.
So we can actually start to see if we can hit the brain and cause, there's all these studies with, you can, the hemisync, you know, get your brain.
Yeah.
Both hemispheres.
We've been doing some hemisync stuff lately. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you can actually see it on the screen, you know, actually see the lines converge. So all that stuff is kind of going into this research to see if we can start getting actual data to document the effect of this place on the people that are living here.
Wow.
Interesting.
And it's interesting you brought up the VR, because I think we were talking to John Tenney about it, was talking about how virtual reality is going to end up changing magic and occult practices, because it's a different space, but you're still creating a ritual circle, just like you were just talking about. And how is that going to affect energy work and just the power of ritual if we are connecting to old gods and things like that? Are we indeed like almost like looking into another plane of existence, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's just this crazy idea that I'm way behind on.
Think about the concept of tulpas and egregores, right? Mm-hmm. And think about creating these sacred spaces. You know, I'm not a magic practitioner. You know, I've never practiced any magic. Definitely studying a lot of stuff, research-wise. You know,
right.
Studying this. But, you know, Marco Visconti, who is in Pennyroyal and who is a fantastic historian of magic and just been great, you know, great consultant and friend, you know, about all this stuff. I mentioned to him, I was like, you know, I would kind of like to... There's a way to use this. It's a mirror model in VR where you can set it up and then a magician could go through the motions of a ritual and this thing will actually record that. So then other people can be taught those magical rituals, the drawing of sigils, what words to say in this module. So then you train everyone and then they all come together in this ritual space. In the same way that Kenneth Grant was building these theatrical sort of backgrounds,
yeah,
to convince people that what the magic they were working really was summoning Yog-Sothoth, right? So you create that theater in this virtual space, which is a sacred space, and then you perform the ritual, but everyone's hooked up to these random number generators that are interfacing with each Oculus set, right? So then you're actually able to see if the will and intention of the magician is having an effect on the reality in their immediate space while the ritual's being performed.
So I worked for this software tech company for a while, and we focused a lot on augmented reality stuff. Yes. And there's a lot with theater, because we were all theater guys, and then the client we had was a theater guy in Shenandoah, Virginia. And but one of the things they were talking about is we started to get a military contract, and so they were working with us to tell us like how the military, like how they have figured out a way to move sound around, so that if you're in a giant warehouse and your army soldiers, you can be in this warehouse, have augmented reality, so you see the sky, you see everything, but you're still seeing your partners perfectly, you can move and run. Well, they now are able to move sound around, so if you see a grenade come, this device that moves can blow up and create a sound like right where it's at, right? Well, the other thing they were talking about being able to do, because I was also part of this, we created augmented reality, virtual reality stuff for education that I did. And I taught an improv class so that I could be in your living room teaching you how to do this stuff. That's what he wanted. Or you can be on an Oculus device. I could be standing at the edge of a classroom. So I did this all in 360 green screen, filmed with like 25. I think they used the Xbox Kinect cameras. Like, it was pretty amazing. But what we got talking about was like how, you know, people, if they were pagan or whatever, could do rituals in their own space. You could create a circle of chairs and it would look like everyone's sitting in your living room, right, doing this space. Well, Josh and I have talked a lot about group elementals, which is essentially creating a spirit, creating an entity, creating a god together as a group using your group energy. Imagine that. And then you're in augmented reality. If you've got something that could actually create the entity that you see showing up in augmented reality and have to make you go, was that there?
Yeah.
Because it's electrical, right? And spirits are all about.
Yeah. Well, and it's all about randomness too, you know, because.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think that's a large part of magic is sort of allowing, definitely with divination.
Divination, yeah.
You don't want to cause an effect, right? You're looking for randomness, right? If you're trying to read tarot and you're trying to read tarot, it'll fail, right?
Oh, yeah. I read tarot for 25 years. I cannot read myself to save my life.
Right. And But what you were saying too about creating an entity in the space, one of the other projects that we're going to attempt is creating a 4-room house and allow the participants to know that we are creating. It's the Philip experiment.
We were just talking about space, that recently. Right?
Yeah, so we're going to program an actual person. Like, everyone's going to submit to us what Philip or whoever we want to call this person, right. You know, what they do in their daily life. And then we're going to program that, and it's going to be running while those people are in the space, right? Nice. But they can't see it. It's the visual is turned off in the Oculus unless the randomness drops below a certain threshold. So as it becomes less random, meaning that there's more of an effect on reality, this thing becomes more visible. And so the more that people leave notes and write histories and create memories and create these memory palaces within this virtual space, hopefully we'll be able to track the lowering of the Shannon entropy that'll actually show there is an effect on the consciousness of all these people together on this entity. And if it's consistently low, it's like you'll see a ghost appear in the space.
And that's the crazy thing, is the technology that we have now and that AI type software, augmented reality, virtual reality, we can create these things now. Like, it can exist. It's just, as usual, not what we expect it to be. The magic of yesterday is the science of today. It's crazy. And then we had said something where we were like, can you imagine doing augmented reality or just virtual reality while also wearing the God helmet? This is essentially like the LSD experiments, but not as directly affecting your brain, as more as tricking your brain this time. I mean, being in the God helmet and then just having certain images pumped your way.
I mean, it sounds like Somerset is the geographical God helmet.
That's true, though. I mean, that's the theory. I mean, that's the theory that I have, is that that it really is affecting people's brains. It's definitely causing people to be more violent. Absolutely. Like, the history of violence here is, like, I'm sure most places have various levels of violence. Definitely in urban centers where there's a concentration of people, there's, extreme violence. But in a small town like this, the things that are happening, the things that people are doing, it's just off the charts weird. You know, there's just...
That's like this documentary I just watched recently. It's called... No One Saw Anything or something like that. And it's about Skidmore, Missouri. And they were talking about, this guy. He was like the bully of the town. The cops wouldn't do anything because the cops were scared of this guy. I mean, everything. This guy like raped like a 13-year-old girl and then went across the border into Kansas and married her because you were allowed to get married without consent at 14 or 13 or whatever, and then came back over and they couldn't prosecute him because as his wife, she couldn't testify. Like, and then, here it is. This happens for like years, all this crazy stuff. And then like the town surrounds him and he gets shot to death in his car and no one saw anything, even though everyone was there. But they start talking about, here's this very, very small town, yet all this violence. They go back, they start to see these little things. And then this is also, if you remember in the news years ago, about the woman who got the baby cut out of her stomach, and the woman took the baby and ran off, and she was just like a fellow dog. Like, she was the woman that got the baby cut, it was like a dog breeder, and this other woman wanted the dog but came there and knew she was pregnant and stole the damn baby and murdered her. Like, that's the same town. Like, there's
really
this crazy stuff that happened in this super small town of like 400 people.
That's crazy.
Nationwide story. Like, it's insane. And it's stuff like that. And then when you were doing the show, like, that's immediately what I thought about, was stuff like that. It's like, I think places like that, there's something going on. There's something going on.
There definitely is, man. I mean, so the thing I found out, this is exclusive to your show. I haven't talked to anybody about it.
Booyah, and a Fearscape exclusive.
But 2 days ago, somebody in the Liminal Lodge in the research group had mentioned, hey, have you guys looked up Charles Hayes? And I was like, nah, I hadn't seen this article. And so they posted the article, and it was about a jewel heist, right? And he was arrested in 1985. It was the or not Jewel Heist, Jewel or Jim Seizure, right? And so, so he was coming from Brazil to the United States. They seized the gems that he had. It's like 40 pounds of gems. It's worth like $20 million. And so it's the largest in the U.S. history of customs seizure of gems. Well, I start looking the guy up, and he shows up in the newspaper back in like 65, and he's running a dance hall, an illegal dance hall on the lake, right? And I'm like, what's this? How did this guy in 65 go to this in 85, right? So then the next thing I find is that in 95, he is it turns out he's a CIA agent, supposedly.
Oh, right? Lord, yeah.
But that not just any CIA agent, he actually is tied into the whole PROMIS program, PROMIS, and Danny Casolaro and the Octopus. You know, the remember Danny Casolaro was the journalist that was assassinated or was murdered in West Virginia while he was investigating the corruption in the government, right? Yeah. Well, his main source of that information was Charles Hayes here in Pulaski County. Woo! And then it turns out Charles Hayes is the is supposedly an ex-CIA hacker who is the head of a group called the Fifth Column that was using hacking to extort corrupt politicians and expose them and then cause them to resign. Okay.
Wow. So, the original dark web.
No, that is kind of the thing. It's like, you know, are those guys, is this Cicada 3301, you know?
Wow.
And, but so you start reading about this guy and there's so much shit on the internet. I mean, it is a vast rabbit hole about how he, you know, he testified in 2002 in the InSlaw case about the PROMIS software, you know, that they'd put on all these different governments' software systems. And everybody was like, he's not a CIA agent. He's just some country bumpkin who was a scrap dealer. Well, he goes to testify and talks about his CIA connections. And then all of a sudden they exert the National Security Act and all of his testimony was suppressed. Right. Wow. So then they end up, he buys this software from Lexington, or these 45 computers from Lexington, Kentucky, that the government didn't clean properly. And they had the PROMIS software was on there. Wow. And so the government was like, and this is even in their New York Times papers, you know, newspaper articles, it's all this stuff. And he said that they say to him, we want him back. Give him back. And he said, no. Right? So then they tell him, we're going to arrest you. You know, give him back. And he says, no. So then they raid his farm, take the computers. They end up giving them back and paying him restitution after he sues them. Right. And a year later, after this whole kerfuffle, a year later, he is arrested by the FBI in an undercover FBI agent sting where he supposedly attempted to assassinate or have his son killed for $100, but it's a setup, right? It seems to be something.
I mean, that's obviously, I mean, you know,
so the tapes have never been released. There's all this crazy stuff. You should just look up Charles Hayes PROMIS.
I'm already on it. I already found some stuff.
But so here, so this is the thing that it prompted me to say, right? They send me that. I find all this stuff. I can't believe I didn't come across this. I start asking other people. They've never heard of the guy. There are all these newspaper articles about this. So it's like, we found Guterma, right? There's already this weird shit with the murders, you know, Lester Burns, all these famous people here in town, clustered here of this high strangeness. And now on top of it, you know, I'm like, there's no way there's anything else. Mm-hmm. And 2 days ago, I find this rabbit hole, right? And I'm like, I have to add an episode for the second season just to talk about this.
Well, it's really funny because you mentioned this, and I just finished reading the Montauk Project book. I don't know if you're hip on Montauk. But no, that reminded me so much of, if you've ever read the book, where he talks about going and buying these computer systems and these types of instrumentation that were only made for the government, and this guy doesn't remember anything, and he's trying to sell it for like $4,000 a piece or whatever, and the Peter or Prestick or whatever his name is like, nah, I can't afford it. Comes back like a year later, the guy has remembered all of his memories, and he's like, give it to me, I'll give it to you for $4 if you can just look into this and spread the word. It's like, and that's like, because he was about to get busted by the government, like, and it was on this farm. It was so very similar, man. Gee.
Well, you don't think that the government's just auctioning off this stuff, but they are, right? Yeah. It really was a government auction, and he got it. It's well documented in the papers.
Well, yeah, and to your point, I mean, they're supposed to clean, clean the systems off and completely erase the hard drives and all that kind of stuff. But also, you know, there's, you know, being a person who's in the IT world, there's usually like a window of time in which you have to do this before you're going to start to incur a penalty, right? And so when you get towards the end of that, sometimes people tend to, you know, slack on process a little bit to get the job done, right? Or maybe it's just accidental. They thought they had wiped those, you know, 15 machines, and they actually hadn't. I've actually heard of someone a few years ago got a hold of the I can't remember the ACH machine from a bank. So a bank closed down and was selling off all of its equipment, and they sold somebody an ACH machine, and it was still encoded. And so they were just doing all kinds of ACH transfers and stealing money from people. And I mean, like, you know, on the one hand, you're like, you know, that's theft. But on the other hand, that's the bank stupid that, you know, didn't think to not, you know, sell an ACH machine. So,
and they always say nothing is ever truly erased. That's why you got to destroy that that hard drive.
Yeah, man. You know, like, you know, it's crazy that they would have that. They really did leave that software on there. I mean, they went after this, you know, and it was very public. But it's like, how could you even auction? Why would you not burn those things, you know, and just,
yeah. Well, it's just, you know, it comes down to a financial thing, right? You know, you can only depreciate computer equipment so far, and then with an auction, you can opportunity to recoup some of that. So it's just where, you know, the people who are running off the books things are not talking to the financial people that's saying, you know, hey, whatever you do, don't sell these machines, you know?
That's true, though. it's a lack of communication between the people really doing the shit and the people that have to get rid of the shit.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You know, did he say we could get rid of this pallet or not this pallet? I don't know. Just throw it all in a truck.
Yeah. It's the same thing, like cops, you know, reselling those cars and stuff that they get, and people like pulling up the carpet in the trunk like to look for the spare tire and finding all kinds of crazy stuff because the cops didn't do the due diligence to like like clear it out.
So that is an interesting, and it makes me think that, you know, so you thought, here I am, I must be getting towards the end of this, right? No more crazy stuff can happen, and you stumble upon this. So I would say that anytime you're like in a, you know, a lull in your research, just say the words, there must not be anything else. Nothing else will happen. And then
that's exactly what happened with when we were researching the Guterma stuff, right? Like, we found Guterma because Pamela told us about the mine, right? And that was all crazy, her whole story about the cult. And she,
shoot, you know, that got me teary eyed. I ain't even gonna lie. Like, and it affected me emotionally.
That was the hardest thing to record too, ethically and just in terms of how do you handle this, you know?
Well, I mean, as a parent, and I know you're a parent, it must have been hard to listen to a lot of that stuff even. God. So
and she definitely suffered trauma of some sort, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know, you know, I personally, I'm not sure that there was really a cult. There may have been, I don't know, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But
yeah, who knows?
She definitely suffered some type of trauma that for her, it's absolutely real, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, and then for a lot of people, and I mean, it's a real thing, you know, that people, with all the stuff, with even the Montauk stuff, I don't know, man. You know, I obviously, recently, I've been doing a lot of research into MK Ultra, Kentucky, yeah, yeah. You know, the narcotics farm in Lexington was the big MK Ultra laboratory.
Yeah.
And, you know, the most LSD in the MK Ultra project was administered in Lexington, you know, 75 miles north of us, you know.
But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it's like, you know, everybody thought MK Ultra was just this thing that crazies were talking about. And then we got all the information released on it. And we were like, oh,
yeah, shit. I mean, and they burned a lot of it. We don't even know.
Yeah,
I think that's funny. You know, in Peter Lavenda's Sinister Forces, you know, book, which, you know, that's been a, you know, he was researching the same stuff in Kentucky and elsewhere, you know, and obviously he focused on Ashland and the Charles Manson growing up in Ashland, mm-hmm. you know, which intersects with Hellier and their whole investigation as well. But it's just crazy that MK Ultra was happening, but the stuff that we know that seems so shocking are the documents they didn't burn.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Burned, it's like, what did they find that was so crazy that they burned those documents?
That you had that, you know? Those got burned first.
It was like, did they encounter some other intelligences? You know, is that what it is? Is that what all of this is?
I mean, and that's what connects. That's, you know, those are the things that will connect the dots, right? I'm sure. Like, to things.
Something that I have been really going around and around on lately is the Earth a Dyson sphere, and we're just living on top of it. Right, we're living on the outside crust, but really,
we just found out there's that second core.
There's a second core in the Earth, you know. So, in all of these weird magnetic fields, and there was a thing I shared an article a couple weeks ago where this guy figured out how to, you know, basically see these plasma tubes, you know, that are around the Earth and all this kind of stuff. It just really, you know, makes me think, you know, and then the whole idea around hollow Earth and everything. And if you were to build a Dyson sphere, you know, would you first inhabit the inside, area before you move to the outside area or whatever the case may be? So, you know, it's just really interesting to think about, you know, and of course that intersects with the Hellier folks with all the things that are going on.
That intersects with Jim Schmidt's book too, just talking about the tubes or what you were just talking about. That sounds very similar to what Jim Schmidt wrote about in his fiction book.
Yeah. So it's just really, you know, was our solar system once a binary star system with a planet that existed between Jupiter and Mars, where Mars was that planet's moon, and that civilization was facing a calamity, right? Their planet was breaking up. It was ending life. And so they built a Dyson sphere around that binary star to harness the power. Their planet broke up, became what is now the asteroid belt. And then they moved to live on that Dyson sphere. And then some millions of years later, we came along.
That's wild, dude. I hadn't thought about that. Well, just because you think of
where
like,
we live.
The sort of, what those are called, the astro labs, you know, where the spheres are inside the rings are inside the rings.
Yep.
And that kind of thing. Like you said, I've never thought about it in terms of like, as it builds out, you know, that it could.
Right.
That's fascinating.
So something I wanted to ask you, cause I know, you know, with our show, we get tapped into a lot of stuff, especially getting a chance to talk to like people like you and Kyle and Greenfield and some of the guys from Hellier and stuff like that. We of course get deeper into our own mysteries that have connected to everything you guys are talking about and things like that. And Josh and I are always we start to get a little paranoid, you know, we're like, especially he's got kids and stuff, you know, you start to get a little paranoid and you're like, am I going to get too close? Cause there was something, I don't even remember what it was. It's not really worth saying whatever, but it's like, we decided not to cover it. Cause we were like, what if we get too close to something, you know, could this affect my family, you know, and how, you know, you are definitely getting close to some things and finding some legit evidence. Are you nervous about that? Like on that regards?
I mean, yeah, I mean, definitely from the beginning of this, when we started researching the murder stuff, I'd never intended to actually like attempt to solve anything, you know what I mean? You know, but definitely I was fascinated by all of these stories. I mean, a big part of this for me too is folklore, you know, and sort of looking into the folklore of this region. But when we looked at all the murder stuff. I was kind of like, there's no cult here. You know, no, that's true. It was after we talked to Greg Newkirk when he interviewed me in the studio and asked me about this stuff. And I told him the story about the cults. And then he opens up to me about being contacted by Amy.
Yeah.
You know, and that he didn't say her name was Amy. He just said that a woman from Somerset had contacted him. No one knew this, but
right.
What I was telling them was exactly what.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, up until that point, I was like, this isn't real. But suddenly they're verifying what I heard from another source that was willing to contact these people and convince them to come to Somerset. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so then, I mean, we all got worried because I thought, well, what if there is something real here?
Yeah.
Put my family in jeopardy because, you know, it's not worth it. I don't care, you know,
yeah,
this story that much, you know, even though it's fascinating. And so, but then ultimately we still researched it, you know, and I realized that, you know, I don't think there is a cult. What's really happening here is much more fascinating than any of that stuff. You know, there definitely is criminal activity. There definitely is human trafficking. Right. That's the stuff that I want to avoid.
Well, just like your show, Hellier, our show, you know, you start off looking for something and then you find out that it's much bigger than you realize and much more grandiose.
Right.
Well, and you know, I'm not going to lie. There's been times when like, you know, like for Stefan, a random black helicopter after we got back from Point Pleasant lands in the field next to his work. You know, it's just like, you know,
came out like, just a couple weeks ago and there was a unmarked black helicopter above my apartment parking lot just sitting there looking at me. And I'm like,
okay. No way.
Yeah. Really? It's like, and then when you were here, Josh, didn't we see two unmarked black helicopters flying past us? Flying where we, like, were?
We went to pick up a rental car. And it was in an apartment complex. And as we were approaching the apartment complex, there's a black helicopter just randomly sitting over top of the apartment complex.
That's so strange, man.
So, I mean, we've had things that definitely raise those paranoia, hairs on the back of your neck. I mean, I've had, you know, we got back from Point Pleasant. We were all having weird things happening with our phones and strange noises on the lines and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's just so it's hard, especially, you know, you read the book, like read stuff from like Keel and others that talks about all these Men in Black things back in the 60s and such. And I don't think any of that stuff just goes away. It probably morphs and shifts and becomes something else. But, you know, it definitely, I guess, when you start to get really close to things or you feel like you're getting close to things, makes you start to question, is that helicopter just randomly flying by my house or are they looking at, you know, and the crazy thing with the, I don't know if you listened to the episode or not, we talked about it, but like several weeks ago, I put a picture up on YouTube that I had taken in my backyard where it looked like there was some kind of entity or goblin or something like peeking behind a tree staring at me. I put that up on YouTube 2 weeks to the day. A military Chinook, if you know what a Chinook is, it's the double blade helicopter, is buzzing my tree line for 45 minutes. The sheriff of the county comes out and says the military is doing exercises in the area. They do that for 45 minutes and never come back.
Yeah,
and I mean, they're running like zero lights and they're buzzing the wooded area behind my house for 45 minutes.
They're so low. I mean, he's showing us like Facebook Live video or whatever. It's so loud. I can barely hear Josh. Like the
like if I had my night vision camera at the moment, I swear I would have been able to see the pilot's face. It was that low coming across my backyard. Crazy.
There's a mysterious universe. I remember there's they tell a story where Aaron, the host on there, one of the hosts, they did an episode about black triangles, and neither one of them had ever had a UFO sighting. But they had interviewed a guy who had all this research on black triangles. He had, you know, talked about it, said that when he talked about it, they'd been buzzing his house and all the stuff. Well, the night that they finished filming that show, he walks outside and a black triangle comes and hovers slowly over his house and then takes off. But it's like, is there like is if the government is aware of all this stuff and say they're data mining,
right?
Conversation, right. All these things, right? That was the whole thing about the Promise software that we were talking about with the Charles mm-hmm. Hayes, right?
Yeah,
it helped them make lists of people that they needed to either mess with or, you know, that they could do things to. So it's like, are the guys in the black helicopter, they've got a list of houses that they've got to fly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like
it's like the Promise app on their smartphone. You know,
they're going to lose their shit. Watch.
Yeah. It's like, it's over here. All right. We've done our 10 minutes. He saw us. Let's go.
All right. Go.
Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy. Yeah, for sure.
No, man, it's weird. That's super strange, though. That's really strange about them hovering over that one spot.
Mm-hmm. And that's just the thing. And it's like, did this stuff happen before? Did we just not pay attention to it? Right? You know, is that the thing? Is it like getting a Jeep and seeing Jeeps everywhere?
Well, right? I mean, I'm a big, you know, my dad's retired Air Force, so I've always been really big into airplanes and helicopters and all that kind of stuff. So I even like if I'm in my backyard working and I hear, I mean, I'll look up to see what it is. And that's just always been the case. Mm-hmm. So I think I would have remembered, you know, military helicopters or black helicopters buzzing my house at random times, you know, in the past. So.
Yeah. What if this whole time it's just your dad, Josh? He's like calling up. He's like, I need you to go buzz my son's house and freak him out.
That would be awesome.
He does this paranormal podcast and it's stupid.
It's,
let's go.
It's actually probably like, you know, swamp gas and a weather balloon or something. So.
Well, you know, let me posit this. And I think this is something I've been playing with is that whenever you, you know, it's the whole, if you look at the phenomena looks back at you, right? But if you think about it, let's say that these guys that are in the black helicopters or the Chinooks or whatever, right? They're elements of the government, and their actual job that they're tasked with, right? The missions they're on involve high strangeness, right? They may not even know that some of the stuff that they're chasing down or being sent to observe or whatever involves high strangeness, right? But nonetheless, they become entangled with it, right? Because it's this whole thing with these information systems and cybernetics, right, that we talk about in the show, and these feedback loops. Because I think a lot of what we call synchronicity and a lot of what we see as high strangeness involves these feedback loops, right? And so, and these sort of entanglements that occur. So if those guys are out actually doing black ops where they're becoming entangled with these information structures, you know, these weird realities, and then we're all researching these things, it almost is inevitable that we're going to be drawn together mm-hmm. because of the entanglement. You know, they're maybe not even looking at you, but because of the way that the structure is built, they're going to end up buttressing against your edge, mm-hmm. you know?
So it's like we're both looking in windows on different sides of the same house.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that they're not even looking for something where you are. It's just because they're entangled, they're just going to cross paths with you.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to fly over just at the right time, or they're going to stop over top of your apartment building, not because of you, but just the right time that you see it, because the system has entangled you as observers. And so you're going to observe them. They're going to observe you. You both don't really know why, but you think it has to do with this high strangeness.
Yeah.
It does, because it's this larger information structure that involves consciousness and belief and observers. And I mean, that's the whole thing, I think, with Hellier too. It's they've onboarded all of these observers, you know, I mean, all of these sightings of Mylar balloons and things. It's just reinforcing and creating a larger and larger aggregate.
Yep. Yeah, we're crowdsourcing information, right? So that's, So
that's the one thing. Yeah, I love. I love places like that. That and Jeremy McGowan too, who we had on, who runs the OSIRIS project. You know, every bit of information that he finds, he puts out there for free for people. Because he's like, let's crowdsource this, let's you know, get this out to everyone. And Hellier essentially has done the same thing. I know they keep some stuff back, of course, but I mean, even Tyler was talking to us. I mean, hell, he told us on his show, he's like, he's had more Mylar balloon sightings when he was rock climbing, man. Like,
no. Dude, I mean, it's strange, too. I didn't really believe in the whole Mylar balloon thing, right? It's still strange. There are lots of Mylar balloons.
Especially, you know, at Family Dollar. Like,
right.
Dollar General.
Exactly, right? But I will say that the day that we released Pennyroyal, right, the day it came out, mm-hmm. when I got home from work and pulled into my driveway and opened the car door, there was one laying in the yard that I thought someone had to place there.
Somebody's messing with you.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like, you know, I've got lots of friends that are like, oh, you're releasing the podcast today. That's awesome, right? But it was this, like, crazy windy day, and I ended up being stuck at work an hour and a half late. So it's like, they couldn't have known when I was going to get home. And if they left it in my yard, it would have blown away. Right. So it's like, it was a weird moment. And so I was talking to Tim Renner, he's the host of Strange Familiars, mm-hmm. The book series, Where the Footprints End.
You know, we just talked about that with Tyler too, that book.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Tim's fantastic. Joshua Cutchins, co-author. But Tim and I were talking about it, about the Mylar balloons. He said, most people don't know that the Mylar balloon phenomena is actually originally tied to the Bigfoot phenomena. That all of these people researching Bigfoot mm-hmm. were reporting, finding, they would have these encounters or have these like high strangeness moments with a Bigfoot sighting and then find a Mylar balloon.
Yeah,
and they were posting it. Whether they were putting it in the forums, and people laughed those people out of the forums.
Yeah.
And now
Tyler was talking about that too.
Did he bring that up?
Yeah, because he was talking about, he's been researching the structures that they, the supposed Sasquatch Bigfoot structures, the mm-hmm. tree structures. Mm-hmm. And he did, he correlated that to the Mylar balloons as well. And just that, so that's weird. I had never heard that until Tyler. And now you've just, once here it is, here's a reinforcement of that.
Yeah. I mean, Tim Renner said this is back in the early 90s that this mm-hmm. first.
Yeah.
And so it was one of those things that people in the Bigfoot field research field were kind of like, you know, they throw out high strangeness.
Yes,
you
know? They do.
It's a creature, flesh and blood creature. So, you know, what's the connection there? And then you have the Hellier team really going after these three-toed footprints, but those mm-hmm. seem to correlate to some type of nature spirit or right. element, you know, which Bigfoot may be.
That's,
you know?
Going with our show and a lot of the guests that we have on and things like that is where, and I think Hellier started this, is this movement towards unifying paranormal activity that they are way more related than you realize. And we have to stop being separate cultures and find our way to a singular culture, because I think if we can combine all of that information together, we're going to find a lot of synchronicities there.
Well, look at John Keel's research, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. with the, you know, they have a UFO sighting over a house in West Virginia, and then the house experiences poltergeist activity.
Right. For 2 weeks. And then a Sasquatch sighting, you know, like.
Which, you know, my theory on the whole, you know, UFO sighting leads to a poltergeist is that it's actually an entity in an invisible suit. Opening your cabinets and poking around and stuff. Right. And actually, I forget what book I was reading recently. I can't remember what it is. But I recently was reading a book and they were talking about how they had an experience. I think it might have been Somewhere in the Skies by Ryan Sprague. But these people had an experience, had a UFO sighting, came back into the house, and then like the oldest daughter was going to bed, and noticed that like this little gray entity was just kind of hiding next to the dresser. And nobody else could see it. She called her mother into the room, and her mother came into the room, and walking behind her was another little gray entity. And then her mother turned around and kissed her goodnight and tucked her in and left the room, and they both followed her out of the room. And they just kind of hung around the house. These little entities hung around the house for a couple of days, just kind of following people around and checking things out and looking at things. And it's like, maybe that is what poltergeist stuff is. Maybe it is somebody that you can't see, hanging around inside of your house, checking things out. But you know, you have to be tuned in to a certain frequency or whatever to see them.
Yeah. That makes me think of all the predator sightings.
Yeah.
Well, I say predator, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah. The see-through creatures. Well, yeah. Isn't it, what's his name that wrote, Communion?
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wasn't his wife, didn't she have a sighting of one of these creatures on the edge of the forest one night, too, outside their house?
Well, and,
we'll see, and that's what that...
It's interesting because it's like, just like, so to tie it back to show that again, two correlations of things that we've discovered is one, we had Andrea Perrin on, who was the oldest daughter from the Conjuring movie, the actual person that was haunted. And in her book and to us, she's a big UFO person as well. And she talked about during that time living there, the number of UFOs that she saw at the same time. And then we researched the, was it the Enfield haunting? Is that the one, the one in England? Well, we decided to look up and saw that at the same time there was a massive UFO flap that happened during that entire haunting set as well in the same area. Like, it's just it's nuts.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, the thought that all of these things can be related, probably are related in all actuality. Mm-hmm. and probably do have some explanations that are not necessarily, you know, so again, to tie back to poltergeist, may not be poltergeist, right? It might actually be things in your house that you just can't see. You know, we've talked about it numerous times, how the human eye can see like 0.0035% of the light spectrum. So what else is there that you just can't see unless you're tuned in to see it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I often think about talk about the idea of a rainforest, right? And you think of all of these different creatures that exist on top of each other, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of those things are not aware of the other things that live right beside them, because they don't need to know about those things. Those aren't predators. Yeah. They're not something that will eat them and not something they can eat, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they're filtered out of their reality.
Right,
because they don't need to see it. But that doesn't mean that they don't bump into each other, or that one doesn't drop a leaf on another one, you know, and suddenly it's like, how did that happen, you know? And it's you know, we have these crazy flesh filters inside our skulls that are making sure that we only see what we need to see, and anything else that might disrupt our survival, it filters out, you know.
Yeah. Well, I've been going down a path lately of through like hypnosis or something. Can you retrain your brain? Like, does the eye see more, but your brain filters it out? So can you retrain your brain with hypnosis or something to see more than what your brain is currently seeing?
Well, think about mushrooms. I don't know if you guys have ever, you don't have to say taking mushrooms
before. We live in Kentucky, yes.
But obviously, like, anyone that who has taken psilocybin or LSD, but I'll just say, you know, organically in terms of psilocybin, your eyes dilate completely, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and with psilocybin, I mean, you're not going to see, like, shit jump out of the walls and creatures that aren't there unless you take a massive dose. But in a normal dose, you're going to see, you know, colors, patterns, right?
And
things like that, right? But what has always fascinated me is your eyes are completely dilated on psilocybin, right? Now, go to the eye doctor and get your eyes dilated. And you can't, you can't see anything, right? So what's the difference there in dilation?
Yeah.
Why when you're dilated at the doctor's office, you have so much light coming in that you've got to wear glasses and you can't go out in the sun. When you take psilocybin, it's the same amount of dilation and you're able to see a ton more information.
Because it's a chemical change in the brain. I mean, it's the dilation of your eye is only affecting your eye. The psilocybin is affecting everything else.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But it's allowing you to see without the harm, in a sense.
I mean, that's just saying, it's not hurting your eyes, you know. Your eyes are dilated in either version, but you're not having to wear grandma glasses.
Right It's like, why is that,
you know? Well, I was thinking about it then, is can you have your eyes dilated at night and still see things that, you know, in the daytime would be harmful. They're just drops. I mean, I'm sure you could probably pick up dilation drops.
I imagine probably get them on Amazon. Addicted to dilation drops, man.
Everybody's like, yeah, let's. Hey, yeah, it's Saturday night.
Small pupil. Small pupils freak me out, man. I can't look at myself in the
mirror. Come on over. We're breaking out the Visine. So yeah,
that's a special.
We're gonna test this, man. I'm definitely gonna add this to the list of things.
And then what if you are on shrooms and you put the eye drops in? I mean, then you get the demon, like the black eyed kids, like you get the full on.
I mean, you know, do you see more UFOs if your eyes are dilated?
What's, I mean, maybe. What happens if you dilate your eyes and put on an Oculus and look at virtual reality?
Oh my goodness.
Right.
You probably have a seizure. That's probably what. Yeah.
Stephen Greer's like, been there, done that. All right. Well, Nathan, we won't keep you around too much longer. I know we've been out here quite a while, man, and want to get things wrapped up. But thank you, man, again so much, man. Just what a blast. We could sit here and shoot the shit hours with you, buddy, man.
Totally, man.
So
you also need to come down. I know you're in Arizona, but next time you're in Kentucky, you know, if the pandemic willing, you guys should come visit us at the studio, you know.
Yeah, we've already talked about it, that next time I come into town, I'm coming down to Somerset to try to come down for a week. Because like I said, I got my friend there. She works at the community college and all that jazz. And so I've already got, because I went down there for like an hour and a half when I was there last time, because that's all that we had time for. But yeah, we're absolutely all about it. We've been wanting to do some exploration, some places I hadn't been yet. So,
and we've been doing some additional experimentation with the Estes method that, you know, the Hellier guys did. You know, mixing in, like, you know, doing 20 minutes of binaural beats, you know, before you get started and see what that does. Or, you know, one of the things I suggested is, let's put Stefan in a hypnotic state and then do an Estes session and see what that turns up.
Yeah, because I already channel a lot, and that's kind of, I don't know, I'm down and scared at the same time.
If you do channeling stuff in, you should, when you guys, definitely let me know when you guys are going to be
doing it. Oh, for sure.
We've been, you know, Kyle, I don't know if you mentioned that he had channeled with the L&L research group in Louisville, you know, and that's just become a big thing. The nine is one of my biggest fascinations.
Oh, that's we are researching now for a future episode. We've been looking into
Huharich, the whole thing, Arthur Young, the Round Table Foundation. So, I mean, I definitely think it's tricksters. I'm sorry, but I think people are channeling, you know, trickster intelligence.
I don't disagree,
but I still think it's fascinating. I mean, it's fascinating that the L&L people are channeling Kawako, you know, and who knows what, obviously the Oakwood thing, you know, like,
yeah,
there were some kids channeling something, you know.
My channel, we haven't really established yet, we haven't really gotten a name, so we don't know if it's the same person or not, but it comes across the same voice, and we don't know if that was just the what did we find out was the name for that out of the psychic dictionary?
Do you remember? Alien voice
is what's called when it's not your voice coming out when you're channeling, and stuff like that, and we don't ever know. And I you know, it's kind of, I don't know. It's a mystery within itself, man.
Yeah.
It just kind of accidentally happened during an Estes session one time. And
really?
Yeah. Like, he just, and now it's like, it's becoming more and more common. Now he just kind of slips into that state. Like, he gets Estes,
the ghost box, like, is that hypnotic tone for me that throws me into it. I mean, shit, I thought I woke up when we were in Sedona doing it. Josh said he tried waking me up like 3 times out of the Estes session. I mean, I jumped up. I was like, shit, I'm sorry, I was asleep. And he's like, no, you weren't.
No, you've been talking for 20 minutes.
So. It was
really, man.
Yeah, it was fascinating. Being in Sedona was crazy. But yeah, we would love to have you on the show anytime you want to come back, man, and talk about this stuff. Always. Yep.
I'm down whenever you guys want to have me.
And we will keep you filled in with any weird stuff that we come across, and share it with you as we do with all the boys from and lady from Hilliard's. Like, because we keep coming across some weird stuff, man, with the people we talk to.
Yeah, definitely, man, because we're constantly, I mean, again, we're we're deep into the second season, so there's all kinds of weird stuff we're finding.
I can't wait. I'm just telling you right now. I can't wait.
It's gonna be weird, man. There was so much stuff that we just couldn't fit in the first season, which I know people are gonna be like, there's just no way that all this stuff is happening there, but it's like, it really is happening.
No, if that much stuff can happen in a small town like Hellier, Somerset's much bigger. So
yeah.
And you get a lot of like just tourists and people coming through that town, and it's just it is just right place. You got the Moonbow not too far away.
I know, like, man. It's just Dog Slaughter Falls, you know.
Yes.
And also think about this, man. Think about the fact that Hellier is a suburb of Elkhorn City.
Mm-hmm. I said that. There was something else too. Oh boy. See, too many damn synchronicities in my head, and I don't have a didactic memory. But there was something else I was looking at, and then I like took like a jaunt and looked over, and I was like, oh my god, this is near Elkhorn City too. It was like something else that had come across our desk, and come to find out, I just happened, because I always look up any city on the maps, and then I looked and I just scrolled up or down or something, and I was like, holy shit, there's Hellier, there's Elkhorn. Wow.
We did a UAP sighting one week, and it was close by or something.
Yes, exactly what it was. It was one of the UAP sightings of the week that we did, and I just punched it in, and it was like right there. Like, here's another Kentucky Triangle.
It's so crazy, man. It's so crazy.
Man. People can go to pennyroyalpodcast.com.
Yeah, pennyroyalpodcast.com, and it's on, you know, all the major platforms.
All the stuffs.
Yeah. I think it looks super cool on Spotify.
It does.
It's because they match the colors and everything.
Yeah.
I agree. Great.
But Stitcher, it's on Apple Podcasts.
Stitcher just updated today. And so it's got a whole new like interface and stuff like that. So
really?
Yeah. So check out Stitcher now, because I think it's trying to copycat. It's trying to do some color. Like, I'm listening to some true crime one, and it's like a disappearance of some senator in Alaska or whatever. So it's a blue sky. Well, now that background's blue, and I'm like,
that's okay. Nice. Hey, that matters. It matters to me. You know,
it does. Yeah. It does to me too, man. It does to me.
But the one other thing I'll say is that we've got if anybody wants to support the project. We've got a Patreon, you know, Penny Royal look up Penny Royal on Patreon, you'll find us, but it's called the Liminal Lodge. Everybody that's part of that, we've got a secret Facebook group where we are sharing all of our research with everybody, you know, all the documents we get from the FBI, just all this stuff. And then we've got all this extended audio. We do a weekly live stream about the research every week. And so, if anybody's interested in helping us dig deeper into the mystery, I encourage them to join us.
I know they will if they aren't already. Yeah. So Nathan Isaacs, ladies and gentlemen, Penny Royal Podcast. Make sure to check that out on all your favorite streaming stations. Thank you so much, sir. Once again, it has been an absolute pleasure. We are so thankful.
Thank you, guys. Seriously, so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you, Nathan Isaac. As usual, I'm just left in awe. I mean, goodness gracious, you guys. Go, if you have not listened to Penny Royal Podcast yet and you're a Hellier fan or just a paranormal, like conspiracy theorist, cult fan, like, go pennyroyalpodcast.com. Just go.
I mean, I am, I'm telling you, like our next trip, instead of going to, you know, Point Pleasant or somewhere else, like, we're going to Somerset.
I wanted to, remember, we were originally supposed to go, but then I got sick and all that stupid stuff. And because, man, I'll tell you, my friend Mary Taylor's lived there for now 20 years, and there's definitely some spooky stuff, though. She'll say that the most interesting thing that happens here is the paint drying or whatever. I don't know what she says, but something along those lines. So, but anyways, yes, thank you so much, Nathan Isaac. We really appreciate you taking your time with us. And again, please check out the Penny Royal Podcast. Want to get out of here, but before we go, Josh, we got to get to our listener story. This one this week is a creepy little story coming from a listener named Cheyenne out of Tennessee. So just check out what Cheyenne has to say.
Hey, y'all, just want to share an experience. A few years ago, my dad had to have emergency surgery and was in a local hospital's ICU. He's a believer in God, but does not necessarily practice his beliefs. He was nearly on his deathbed. Now, while in the hospital, not on meds, he said in the corner of the room behind the door that he saw what looked like a black gargoyle with wings. Now, he said it was curled up in a ball and staring at him while he was trying to sleep, and he was so uncomfortable that he had to call the nurse. My father is not one to be scared easily. He also said he saw an old woman sitting in the chair during the middle of the night in the hospital in a hospital gown, which I presume must have been someone who had died and was stuck there. Upon leaving, he decided to ask the hospital nurses if the hospital was haunted. The nurses told him that several people reported seeing people peering through the window at them, and that wouldn't be possible because it was a four-story building. Now, I love when my father talks about this stuff because I'll tell you what, I love the paranormal and I love Fearscape.
All right. Yeah. Ooh, a gargoyle. I don't know that we've ever had a gargoyle story.
Yeah.
It's crazy that you immediately think gargoyle instead of like demon or something like that. It's like, specific to me. Right.
But you put it in frame of reference, though. Right. I mean, if you saw a horned creature with wings, you probably think gargoyle. Right?
Demon. Like, I'm thinking demon. Oh. But again, it depends what it looks like to me. And like I said, this is a very specific response. That's what makes me kind of believe it a little bit more, is because it's so specific. Like gargoyle, like that is a specific type of creature that has a specific look, you know, and especially the way he talked about being balled up in the corner, which to me imagines like being hunched and perched almost, like is what I was thinking.
But it also does sound a little bit like could be a night hag too.
Possible.
I mean,
and then you got the old lady sitting in the rocking chair, just watching him sleep. And then all the people saying they seen eyeballs coming through the window on the fourth and third floors, like that's scary. Like, I'm just like, no, man. It reminds me of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie, when old dude was floating in the window and he's like, hey, bro, let me in. He's like, Luke Perry's like, I don't think that's such a good idea, man. Like, that's what it is. You got these folks just floating, staring in the window, watching you eat your bland broth.
Yeah, really. Maybe they want some chicken broth, man.
Yeah. You know, maybe they just need, like, they just need a jolt from the fleshy jolt of the human battery. All right, man, we got to get rolling. We need to get out of here. But just a reminder, we are still raising money for the Fearscape Media Network, as well as the Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. You can go to fearscapemedia.com/support and support us in any monetary amount that you can. If you want to support our show specifically, make sure to put that in the byline. You can also go to fearscapepodcast.com/support and check out our Patreon and all of that good stuff. And send all your listener stories to us at fearscapepodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on any of the social medias. Josh, do you got anything else to say before we get going?
You know, I would really love some ratings. You know, that's all I'm going to say. Just, you know, click anywhere that you can rate us, rate us.
Rate us, review us, share us.
Don't tell us. Please don't hate us, just rate us.
Please don't hate us, just rate us. This has been Fearscape signing off. Seriously though, we love you guys so much. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to Fearscape Paranormal Podcast here on the Fearscape Media Network. I've been Stefan, and just a reminder, keep your eyes on the skies.
This has been Josh. The truth is now.
And don't forget, folks, hold those blankets extra tight. Things tend to get spooky when you're listening to Fearscape. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We hope you have enjoyed this guidepost on the road of high strangeness with us. And we thank you, as always, for listening and joining our caravan to the weird and unknown. Please consider supporting us as we continue our journey to find the answers we all seek. FearscapePodcast.com/support.